You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, the debut this week of a new research journal. It's a story that wouldn't ordinarily be a newsmaker, but this journal is a lot different. In contrast to other scientific journals, and what I mean scientific journals, we're talking about Science and Nature, probably two of the most well-known. Well, in contrast to all kinds of journals, they can run you hundreds, thousands of dollars for a yearly subscription. This one, the Public Library of Science Biology, is available free online. And if you want that URL, you can go to our website. We'll give it to you. Can this journal change the way scientific publishing is done? Is this the future? Can a free journal compete with the field's leading pay-for-access publications? Well, for the answer, we're going to be talking to Dr. Harold Varmus. He's co-founder and chair of the board of directors of the Public Library of Science. He's a 1989 Nobel laureate in physiology or medicine, former director of NIH, and president and chief executive officer now at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Varmus.
Ira, thank you very much.
Tell us about this. This is the first week it's been publishing. How about the hits? Have they been on the internet?
It's been enormous, unbelievable, yeah. Millions of hits, in part because we were fortunate to have in the very first issue and in some issues that are soon to come, but from which some papers were released, some papers of tremendous public interest that were described in the New York Times, and the Washington Post, and Science Magazine, and elsewhere. So people were drawn to those articles and drawn to have a look at this novel publication.
The most famous one would be this week, that monkey mind control.
That's right.
About the robotic arms.
Yes.
How does the economics of this work? I mean, if everybody's paying hundreds and thousands of dollars for a printed or a other online journal, how do you stay in business by charging nothing?
Well, we'll see. But the way we're doing it at the moment is we have three sources of revenue. First, authors whose papers pass peer review are then charged about $1,500 for each article they publish with us. We will never turn down an article because someone can't pay, but the vast majority of our authors are well-funded by funding agencies, and we believe, and we have reason to believe, that the funding agencies will be happy to support the author's fees. Secondly, we will be taking advertising. There's advertising in the first issue. Most of that, it's non-obtrusive. Most of it is advertisements for jobs at academic institutions. And of course, to start this journal, which is not an easy thing to do, especially a journal that has extremely competent editors and a lot of attractive features and a new mode of doing business, was supported by a very generous grant from the Moore Foundation in California.
1-800-989-8255 if you'd like to talk with Dr. Harold Varmus about the Public Library of Science Biology. The fact that you got the word biology on the end of that, is that a dead giveaway? There are going to be other ones coming out?
Well, it is, yes. First of all, the reason we use the word biology is that there is at present no journal that encompasses all of biology. We like to say we go from molecules to ecosystems, and indeed the first issue has on the screen as the cover pictures of elephants in Borneo. There's an important study of elephant evolution in the first issue. Secondly, there will be other journals soon. In fact, one of the ways in which the business we believe will work is by publishing some flagship journals, PLOS Biology, PLOS Medicine, perhaps one in Global Health, and then a series of journals that will be addressed to specific disciplines like oncology or molecular biology or development. And then there will be a set of third-tier journals, at least that's how the current plan is envisioned, in which the focus is much narrower, special interest journals, archival journals, which we believe will be much cheaper to operate and will help make ends meet.
1-800-989-8255 is our number, talking with Dr. Varmus about this new Public Library of Science. Now, one feature of the journal that makes it accessible to the general public is the short synopsis of the research that accomplishes the journal article. Tell us about that.
Well, we feel it's very important for the public, which is particularly interested in biology and medicine, to be able to understand what is in each article. Indeed, science is sufficiently complicated at this point that it's often important for people working in different fields who are themselves scientists to have a lay summary. So we've hired a science writer to translate every article into plain language that is non-technical and makes the article interesting and accessible.
What has been the reaction from the other mainstream journals that, you know, actually charge us money to subscribe?
Well, it varies, and I think you have to understand the variation among the current journals in the publishing world. You mentioned Science and Nature. We don't consider ourselves to be alternatives to Science and Nature, or in any sense trying to push them out of the market. These journals are excellent journals. They are read regularly by all of us because they are the weekly news magazine of science. They have science politics and book reviews and stories about the developments in other parts of the world, as well as a few excellent scientific reports. We think that those journals will always be purchased for their what we call front-of-the-magazine material that is important to make everyone who's a scientist current with events in the scientific world. They could make their articles freely accessible, just as we do. And I should mention that free access means two things. It means, first of all, making it immediately available to anyone through the web, but it also means deposit of the article in a public library, a digital public library. That's why we call our organization the Public Library of Science. And that library is crucial because it puts together all the information that's currently being published in science and allows anyone anywhere to search that library for information from any journal that contributes to it to find all the information they may need for whatever project they're working on, whether it's a high school report or the attempt to treat a patient or do an experiment in a laboratory.
If memory serves me correctly, and my memory's bad these days, you know, I'm at that age, I've been hearing physicists saying for years that they've been the first to try this.
They absolutely were the first. And let me make clear, we are not the first to do it even in biology and medicine. There's an organization in England called Biomed Central. The Journal of Clinical Investigation has been doing free access publication for some time. What we're trying to do here is to show that in the domain of biology, we can publish something which is an extremely prestigious journal. There is a cultural impediment to our success that I need to mention. That is that postdocs and students are nervous about publishing in an unknown journal of any kind, but especially an unknown journal that operates in a different way. It's freely accessible and doesn't cost anything to buy. You have to create the value that is normally conferred by a high price, by a history of prestige. The physicists were the first to do this. They were publishing preprints online for free many years ago, and actually we learned a lot from Paul Ginsberg, who started that movement. Right. He's a member of our board.
Are you having any trouble getting, you know, submissions from the top-tier scientists, or are they just eager as punch to come and join this?
We're having, let me put it this way, we have many terrific articles from top-tier scientists. Not everyone has yet bought onto it. Furthermore, as I mentioned, one of our most important target audiences and target authors come from the outstanding trainees who work in such labs. And they're the ones who have to be convinced that submitting their best work, which will be the basis on which they're employed in the future, to a new journal, that's a major task for us.
Mm-hmm. One of the marks of a great journal is who actually peer reviews the papers. I mean, who does the peer reviewing? Is it the whole internet of scientists who can look at these and then say, hey, this is, you know?
Well, let me make clear, we don't publish these articles until they've been peer reviewed. We have a distinguished list of academic editors, which you can see at the website, which is www.plos.org, and in addition, we have a set of professional editors who've been recruited from journals like Nature and Cell and several other distinguished journals who coordinate the review process and provide advice during the reviewing. So I think we have an impeccable review process that works as well as review does anywhere. It's very rigorous, and we are publishing only articles of the highest quality to try to overcome this cultural barrier to acceptance of an online free access journal.
Let's go to the phones. John in Portland. Hi, John.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, I have a PhD, and I have an institute that I developed on my own. I'm not associated with a regular academic institution. And so if I wanted to write an article, say, on the modern or historic use of edible wild plants, for instance, How would I would you accept something like that? What kind of science do you guys actually want published in these web systems?
Well, in general, we're looking for reports of new discoveries as a result of new research. We occasionally solicit history pieces, or we do have a so-called front of the journal in which we publish, for example, write-ups of articles elsewhere by students and postdocs who've been in journal clubs. We have historical overviews. We have occasional book reviews and obituaries, editorials. You could send us a proposal, and we'd look at it and give you some advice. I can't make any promises.
Right. Well. So, for instance, one of the topics that I've researched is Native Americans used to dig a plant called Wapato out of swamps, and they would use a certain process. And what I found was in the literature, they had white observers who would be guessing what they would be doing. And so then, you know, I tried this, actually went out in the swamps myself, did this, and made some discoveries that sort of enlightened the field. And so would that be considered, you know, the kind of science that you guys would
Yeah, I think I'd have to I'd prefer that you confer with our professional editors on that one.
Send it in. And I'll run it up the flagpole. 1-800-989-82.
The board of directors does not oversee editorial policy.
Let me go to Sandy in Salt Lake City. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Dr. Varmus, I just wanted to congratulate you on this online journal that's free access. I work in academia.
Have you looked at it?
Pardon me?
Have you looked at it?
No, I'm in my car, and I heard about it. I heard this. I listened to this show.
Well, don't look at it while you're in your car.
I'm not.
Get back to your office.
No, don't take my computer with me in the car and look at it. But I, from my point of view, I know when I do searches on the web, I come across manuscripts that I really need to read for my research, and very often all I can access is the abstract.
Right, because you go to PubMed and you see the title, authors, and abstract, and you've experienced that frustration that people have when they're not at academic institutions that have licenses that are purchased at very high cost from the journals.
And you think
you're a taxpayer, and you have a right to see the results of the research you've paid for.
Yeah, because my husband does not work. He's not in, I'm in healthcare, he is not, but very often I want to share something with him, so I tell him to go to the web. Well, he can't get it because he doesn't have the access. And even where I am, our library doesn't have access to all the journals online, and they may not have the print copy, so then I feel like I'm sort of stuck. So I'm just tickled that that this is now available, and I can't wait to actually look at it and go to the site.
Right, but we can't publish everything, unfortunately, and we're trying to set an example and show that this method of publication works so that other journals will move in that direction.
Yeah, and I do hope people pick up on that, and that we will be seeing more of that. So thank you very much for your vision.
Well, thanks for your comment.
Thank you for calling, Sandy. Before you go, you're into so much, Dr. Varmus, so many different things. I want to talk to you about one other thing while I have you here on the phone. I know that you also chair the scientific board of the Gates Foundation's Grand Challenges in Global Health Initiative.
Yes,
and the board announced today 7 broad goals for the initiative. What are those, and why do we need this?
Well, let me give you a little background here just in a second. The start of the year, Bill Gates announced that he wanted to promote more science to address the obstacles that stand between us and making major improvements in health in the developing world. And he asked a group of us to define those challenges in a systematic way. And along with Rick Klausner from the Gates Foundation and Elia Serhoni, who's the director of NIH, we assembled an international group of 20 people who solicited from the world scientific community and public health community some ideas about what might be grand challenges. We got over 1,000 suggestions. We sat down in Virginia for a couple of days and came up with the 14 grand challenges that were announced today that address 7 goals. Those goals are mainly to improve childhood vaccines, to create some new vaccines, to control insects that transmit agents of disease, to improve nutrition, to improve drug treatment, to cure latent and chronic infections, and to try to measure disease and health statuses accurately. Now, within each of those broad goals, we have 1 to 3 specific challenges that are more technically defined, and people should go look at these at the GCGH, Grand Challenges for Global Health, .org, to read about them. Hmm. But the idea now is to attract grant proposals from people around the world to be awarded then grants of up to $20 million to pursue some of these the strategies they propose for pursuing these grand challenges.
Talking to Dr. Harold Varmus this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You'd think with, you know, these are sort of like the orphan challenges, you know, for poor kids and poor countries that no one else wants to tackle.
In many ways, that's true. These are the so-called neglected diseases. We know that just roughly over 90% of the research dollars are spent to address the diseases that afflict 10% of the world, and we need to readjust that. There's so many new developments in basic science that have the potential to improve our ability to manipulate the immune system, to make better vaccines, to control pathogens, whether they're bacterial or viral or parasitic, that cause inordinate disease in the developing world, or to more accurately assess the health status of individuals and societies. We need to put those new research tools to use in the developing countries.
Mm-hmm. Got about a minute left, Dr. Varmus. How will you know when your Public Library of Science, if it's a hit, or you probably think it is already a success?
Well, it's starting off very well, but there are two important things to watch for. One is whether we can sustain the very high level of quality and interest in the journal over the next several months. And then secondly, we'll have to watch over a longer term to see if we're successful in launching several additional journals and making the business plan work as effectively as we and our sponsors think we can.
Mm-hmm. And you'll know that pretty soon, I guess.
Well, the financial plan will take several years to know how well it's working. And, of course, the ultimate test is whether both individual scientists and organizations, especially the scientific societies that now publish excellent journals, move toward an open access movement in which their material is made freely accessible through an alternative mode of payment, and their material is deposited in a public library that is accessible to people all around the world, including those working on grand challenges.
Well, you know, open source now seems to be the name of the game and everything. Software maybe now in research?
Well, this is, I don't know if this is the source as opposed to the results, but we're quiet on the issue of software here, but we are trying to make the results that governments and funding agencies have paid for freely available, and you know that we're trying to capture people's conviction that public libraries are still a wonderful institution. We're trying to create one for science.
Well, good luck to you. Harold Varmus is President and Chief Executive Officer, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, and co-founder and chair of the Board of Directors at the Public Library of Science. Good luck.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break and change gears once again. Come back and talk about scientific freedom versus national security. Can they coexist these days? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.